Karen DeWitt reports.
Cuomo's chief of staff, Melissa DeRosa, in a private meeting with Democratic lawmakers earlier this month, told senators and assembly members that she wasn't concerned that nine top infectious disease experts and epidemiologists had quit the state's health department in the past several months. She says the administration gets plenty of information through frequent consultation with national and international scientists, including Dr. Michael Osterholm of the University of Minnesota and a member of President Joe Biden's COVID task force. DeRosa called Osterholm one of the two chief advisors to the governor and says Cuomo speaks with him on a regular basis. But Osterholm told Firing Line host Margaret Hoover that is not the case.
That's absolutely not true. Never true. I've had one 5-minute conversation, which was a surprise, and he had seen me on MSNBC and just wanted to call and say what a great job I did. Okay. And that's my sole total I've ever had a conversation with him.
Osterholm says he did, over the summer, check over weekly data that the Cuomo administration used to determine yellow, orange, and red zone microclusters to help control the spread of the disease, a program that he praised as innovative. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
President Biden will hold a virtual meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau tomorrow. It's Biden's first one-on-one meeting with a foreign leader since taking office. According to the White House, the two leaders will discuss COVID-19 response, climate change, and the economic ties that bind our countries. It's unclear whether they'll talk about making changes to the land border that's been closed for almost a year.
Since restrictions on non-essential travel across the U.S.-Canada border took effect last spring, thousands of families found themselves split across a yawning divide. With definitions and quarantine rules that changed and evolved over nearly a year, many have struggled to maintain their relationships. That becomes even more complicated for families with children. Emma Jacobs spoke with several families about how they've been living with changes that have now been in place for nearly a year.
Before the pandemic, Esther Hazan's relationship with her husband didn't feel that different than any other long-distance relationship. She lives in Montreal. He lives north of New York City. She'd driven down in mid-March of last year to celebrate his birthday.
We heard rumors like borders are closing, and we were like, there's no way. Like, there's just no way. This is not possible.
Of course, it was possible. The border closed on March 21st to all non-essential traffic. The two couldn't see each other for several months. Then they began meeting on the Quebec-Vermont border, sitting together in lawn chairs on opposite sides of an invisible line. As a Canadian, Hazan can't cross the land border, but she's allowed to fly in. She's done that a handful of times, including for their wedding in November. She and her husband both have kids from their previous relationships, and it's been hard to bring this new family together.
It would have been really nice for them to get to know each other, and it would have been nice for me to be able to spend some more time before marrying their dad, because you want to have as easy transition as possible with the children blending families.
Every time she travels, she has to quarantine for 2 weeks when she returns to Montreal. She says her boss is not thrilled. This summer, Canada created exceptions for close family members. So her husband can visit, but he has to quarantine for 2 weeks. Meanwhile, Hazan's children in Montreal have struggled to see their biological father, who's also in New York State. The oldest, Leora, is 14.
It's very, like, different and hard, I guess.
She went down for her mom's wedding and got to meet her new siblings, but she doesn't think she'll be able to spend a lot of time with them until travel gets easier.
I would like to hang out and, hang out and, do stuff and, get to know them a little bit better.
The border is affecting thousands of families used to living cross-border lives. In Watertown, Dan and Jordan Rodriguez say they haven't been able to visit with Dan's 8-year-old daughter, Alice. She lives with her mother a few hours north of Quebec City. He used to cross to see her about once a month. Now, it's been almost a year of video chats and calls, an anguishing new normal.
She has changed so drastically in personality, just talking with her on FaceTime. But to sit down and spend time with her is, I think probably one of the biggest things that I miss. Because when I did get to see her, we were going out and doing things on our own, and it was fun. We can go shopping. We can go out to the lake.
They've sent her care packages they opened together over video chat, explains his wife, Jordan.
We got our hats and crowns and just random crafts. And I think we got her like tree moss and just random stuff. And she was just ecstatic.
They even organized virtual playdates. Dan and Jordan's children in Watertown on one side of the screen, Alice and her siblings in Quebec on the other.
We do like a Play-Doh date. Like we just set up the camera and we all play with our Play-Doh at the same time.
Alice hasn't met her youngest sibling yet. Dan and Jordan gave birth just a couple of months ago. And it's been hard to be apart for so many milestones. Families separated by the border restrictions have found each other on Facebook. There are now groups with thousands of members, including engaged couples and extended family members. Devon Weber co-founded a group called Let Us Reunite. On a panel recently hosted by the Canada Institute, she said a lot of the families in the group are split between border towns that might be less than an hour apart. But because Canadians are only allowed in by air, that can now mean a full day of travel with transfers through multiple airports.
If you're immunocompromised, if you're going to visit someone immunocompromised, it's a non-starter. You can't do it. I'm not going to get on a plane and fly to go to visit my mother who has, you know, asthma.
The group is lobbying Washington to adopt the same exemptions Canada created for close family members to enter by land.
We understand that COVID-19 is a deadly disease. We are not negating that, but we think that the mental health of our members is important too. And we think that there is a way that you can take into account the safety needed to travel with the COVID restrictions and still be able to see our loved ones.
Canadian Tara Sly lives in Ottawa. She's waiting for her immigration petition to be approved to move to the United States, where her husband is waiting for her. The pandemic has also created significant delays in processing applications. She is pregnant, and now he is saving up his vacation time to come up and quarantine ahead of her due date this spring.
I've been having some complications, so I'm actually not allowed to travel. So I'm here, and he hasn't been able to be part of anything.
He also has daughters from a previous marriage.
And like, they want to be part of the pregnancy, and they want to be able to see, you know, like, they're so excited, but they can't be part of anything.
Sly says in Canada, any article about family separations she reads has a slew of comments saying that people should have known better than to get into cross-border relationships. But people don't realize, she says, that no family anticipated how complicated their routine crossings could become.
Everyone is grieving and losing something in this. This is just another layer for us because it has made it so much more difficult to even have loved ones support you through some of these difficulties.
Restoring normal travel still appears a long way off. Both the U.S. and Canada have added restrictions for permitted travelers in recent weeks, including testing and quarantine measures. In the meantime, separated families say they still hope policies will get introduced to make their lives a little easier. Emma Jacobs, North Country Public Radio.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:15. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, opening a restaurant in a small town during a pandemic. We'll talk with the owners of one of the newest eateries in St. Lawrence County, the Blue House in Madrid. That's coming up in just a few minutes right here on the 8 o'clock hour.
This is music from Danny Thomas in Canton. Broadcast of the 8 o'clock hour is supported by the ARC Jefferson St. Lawrence, supporting individuals with disabilities to achieve their goals for more fulfilled lives. The ARC JSLC.org. The ARC Jefferson St. Lawrence, achieve with us. And by Thomas J. Lombard, P.E., Keysville, providing engineering planning and environmental consulting services to Northern New York and Vermont. 518-834-7729.
A J. Jefferson County teenager has been selected for New York's Dairy Princess Court. Elizabeth Hyman, who goes to Belleville Henderson High School, was named second alternate in the pageant held on February 16th.
Teen dairy leaders from 11 counties across the state compete for the honor. Judges evaluate the contestants on their communication skills, knowledge of the dairy industry, poise, and personality.
And the state Dairy Princess advocates for a year for dairy farmers and serves as a spokesperson for the industry. This year, the organization has also been helping to distribute dairy products to those in need of food assistance during the pandemic. The state Dairy Princess for 2021 is Shelby Benjamin of Shenango County.
So over the weekend, NCPR's Amy Feyerreisel stopped by the Potsdam Snowman Festival to check out some of the creations made by over 20 groups of families, students, and friends. Here's her audio postcard.
It's Saturday afternoon, and it's kind of a perfect afternoon to build a snowman or a snow creature or one of the many creations I'm seeing in front of me at Ives Park in Potsdam. There are little groups scattered around. They're all sort of distanced apart. They have their own space to work. And they're building all sorts of really fun, different sculptures for this snowman festival. I'm seeing snow forts, snow people, upside down snow people. Okay, right now I'm looking at a really fun snow duck that's been colored with must be food coloring. And there's a big one and then three little ones right behind it.
I'm Chris Rosell, 45. I live in Norwood. I'm a Norwood artist. And this is a brainchild of my friend Shelly May and I. And we wanted to do Think Spring, which is a lot like her farm.
Yeah, I'm Shelly May Bartlett, and I am 60 years old. And I wanted everybody to smile and encourage everybody that spring is coming, and it's coming right on time. But in the meantime, you know, we brought some friends from the farm, monarch butterflies and bees and ladybugs and rabbits and frogs and crickets.
It's a big art class.
Yeah.
There's like a big mound of snow and lots of flowers in it and these little sort of creatures sitting in chairs around.
Yeah, it's an art class.
I love it.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, young restaurateurs in a St. Lawrence County village on the challenges and joys of opening a new eatery during a pandemic. After that, stick around for Bird Note coming up at 8:30, the long-eared owl. There may be as many as 5 million across the globe, but they're rarely seen. We'll hear more on that in just a minute. Right now, it's 25 degrees in Fort Covington and in Star Lake, 21 degrees in Long Lake and Owl's Head, 28 in Sackett's Harbor, 19 degrees in Chestertown. We can expect a chance of snow today and for the next couple of days, but much milder temperatures with highs getting into the 30s and even nearing 40 in some parts of the region as we head into this week.
Alicia and Josh Talon say they won't let a pandemic get in the way of a lifelong dream, running one of the North Country's newest eateries. Opening a restaurant when lots of others are closing is a big risk. But the couple says they're taking the process one step at a time and have had lots of family and community support along the way.
The Blue House Restaurant sits at the end of a short commercial block in Madrid, a small town midway between Canton and the St. Lawrence River. It sits above the Grass River. And if it looks like a house being renovated, that's because it was a house turned eatery. Todd talked recently and stopped by for a chat with the owners.
It's midday and midwinter cold. And as I step inside the Blue House restaurant, I feel a wave of warmth. I take in a breath and my stomach growls. Yum.
Ooh, it smells really good in here.
Fire roasted veggies.
Hello?
Hello? You must be Josh.
Yeah.
Todd Moe.
Hey, good to meet
yeah,
you.
Yeah, elbow bump, right? Yeah.
Owner and head chef Josh Talen pops out of the side kitchen to greet me. I'm here for a chat about opening a new restaurant during the COVID pandemic. Josh is eager to show off what his restaurant offers. A stone wood-fired oven, the capstone in the kitchen, a lightning strike, huge maple slab that dominates the bar area, and a great view of the now frozen Grass River and Madrid's Stone Arch Bridge. His wife, Alicia, is running a few minutes late caring for their toddler daughter, and Josh shows me up a set of new steps to the second floor dining room. Now, renovating an old home usually uncovers a past life. So get this. During remodeling, they found a cubby space filled with ephemera, century-old coupons for a bakery in the house. Josh says it was, you know, one of those little aha moments that maybe they're doing the right thing. The Home Bakery, as it was called, was owned by E.R. Crandall.
And then we found evidence that he passed away in 1920, and I said, come full circle, exactly 100 years later, we're going to be baking out of a wood fire just as he did in the past. And right there, I just knew that, like, this was meant to be, you know? So I'm keeping that history and integrity of this space, and I'm hoping that this wood-fired oven here will be beyond me, you know? So again, I feel like we can give a real gift to our community.
Community is important to Josh and Alicia Talen. They both grew up in Madrid and have lots of family, friends, neighbors that have all stepped up to help out. What's missing are bustling servers and a busy kitchen staff. Remember their one-step-at-a-time strategy? Right now, it's just Josh and sous chef Brad Rookie in the kitchen and Alicia as manager. Josh has 25 years of experience in the kitchen at Paul Smith's College in Colorado, France, and restaurants here in the North Country. They started out with a market approach of offering takeaway pizzas, salads, rolls, eggs, breads, take-and-make dinner kits. That success has allowed them to expand their menu and hours. Most of their vegetables, meats, and eggs come from local growers. As we stand at the bar chatting, they tell me they could have opened a restaurant along a busy highway or a bigger town, but their close-knit community in Madrid is what keeps them optimistic.
We're so lucky because we're both from the area. We have family here. And, you know, if you were to be able to pop in on a Friday night, you'd see my dad doing dishes. You would see Anastasia running. She's my sister-in-law. Yeah. Running around getting taco kits together for us. You know, you would see my very good friend Denise, who owns the Village Diner, helping cash you out because I can't field 300 phone calls and do cash at the same time. So it's been this really amazing effort of everybody that cares about us just being like, how can we help?
Right.
You know, we'll pay you in pizza, or we'll, you know.
My dad's sitting there folding, like, you know, 300 pizza boxes. And
so right now, it is the three of us, but it's just a labor of love for a lot of people around us that really want to see us succeed and care. And everybody has fun doing it. It's just a fun, fast-paced place to be.
For us, it was like Madrid or bust. And it just kind of honestly fell in our lap that here's an opportunity that presented itself, and we just dove in, took that, you know, that risk for ourselves.
A lot of people would say to us, oh, you got to open a spot in Canton. Canton's so starved for restaurants. And it's right. While that may be true, it just wasn't like in our hearts to go outside of Madrid. This is a huge endeavor, and we really weren't up for the idea of entertaining becoming restaurateurs unless it was sort of the way that we wanted it to be.
But and you look at Madrid, though, so it's centrally located. So, I mean, like, within a 10-minute drive, you're hitting Potsdam, Canton, Norwood, Norfolk, you know, so it's
no more than about 25 miles from Ogdensburg and Messina. Yeah.
But the thing with that is, like, just trying to find that entrepreneurial spirit to bring that back into small towns and rural communities. And I've always said, like, you know, through any type of devastation, war, famine, depression, the first thing that really emerges within a community is a restaurant. And we wanted to have that opportunity. So hopefully, again, like our market approach and our retail side of things can really like sustain itself. And if we have an opportunity to do a little bit of dine in on, you know, hire more staff and get things going, open it up a little bit better. And, you know, that's pretty far down the road for us, honestly. We really appreciating like also we, you know, have a family and Clementine at home. And, you know, so we don't want to, you know, we need a life outside of this also. So we're trying to keep things pretty small and intimate right now, and just so we can manage ourselves better in our lives and, you know.
One step at a time.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely want to be able to share the space that we've built with people. Everybody is just so excited for dining again, even though we know that it may not be one of the lowest risk activities. So we're just... Right. Like, even close friends of mine have said, when are you going to open for dine-in? And I'm like, I just don't know right now, you know. But it's definitely was built to be enjoyed, and it will be for sure.
As the season changes and snow and ice melt off the back deck, Alicia and Josh Talen envision opening the Blue House restaurant to diners, sharing a drink at that large slab of maple in the bar, more fire-roasted veggies and fresh breads from the wood-fired oven, one step at a time. And as they say, for now, that's just fine. Todd Moe, North Country Public Radio in Madrid, New York. Music by the Adirondack Harper, Martha Gallagher, out of Keene. It's 8:29. You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio on this Monday morning. I'm Todd Moe, and just a reminder that the 8 o'clock hour is supported by Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, recently designated a comprehensive joint replacement center. Learn more at adirondackhealth.org. And by the Family YMCA of the Glens Falls area, open Monday through Saturday, and the YMCA Adirondack Regional Wellness Center in Chestertown, open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Learn more at glensfallsymca.org.
And business underwriting is a great way to reach NCPR's engaged and loyal audience. Your business or organization can join with Adirondack Health and the Family YMCA in Glens Falls to help support the North Country's source for real news and great music. Just email jessica@ncpr.org to find out how. Right now, we're off to Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Some birds are rare. Some birds are shy. Some birds dwell in remote, utterly inaccessible forests and swamps and deserts. Not the long-eared owl. Though it's hard to estimate the populations of nocturnal birds, there may be as many as 5 million long-eared owls in the world. They aren't particularly shy, and in many places they breed and winter right in towns and cities. And yet, even by owl standards, the long-eared owl is a rarely seen bird. Even if you're constantly on the lookout for this handsome mid-sized owl, it's a red-letter day when you actually get to see one. It's not a question of rarity, shyness, or inaccessibility. It's a combination of plumage and habits that makes the long-eared such a find. The mixture of warm browns and cool, bark-like grays lends the bird an astonishingly branch-like appearance. When people or other potential predators approach, long-eareds further enhance their invisibility by closing their orange eyes and stretching their bodies as close to the vertical as possible. Even to an extremely practiced human eye, they become nothing more than a jagged stump in the roost tree. Sometimes, just knowing they're out there, somewhere, has to be enough. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
It's 8:32, and this is North Country Public Radio's 8 o'clock hour, supported by Casella Resource Solutions, serving the waste and recycling needs of homeowners and businesses online at casella.com. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Don't forget to check out the Adirondack Film Society's Winter Filmmaker Series starting this Wednesday. They're running six award-winning films that will run the spectrum from drama to comedy to horror, and it'll take place Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock, starting this Wednesday, February 24th, and running throughout the month of March. And if you stick around afterwards, you can enjoy a live moderated discussion with the film's director and one of the people who helps lead the festivals. So you can find out more from the Adirondack Film Society.
And a reminder to folks in Canton, their open forum tonight on the Village of Canton's Advisory Committee on Public Safety is this evening via Zoom. It starts at 7 o'clock, and it's an opportunity to hear the process explained and also get feedback on the recommendations the committee developed. And if you want more information, check out the website. You'll find the information about the Zoom link at cantonny.org. The Village of Canton's website has a link to that Zoom meeting tonight on public safety starting at 7 o'clock.
We are wrapping up the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then after that, between 8:51 and 9 o'clock, it's the Marketplace Morning Report. The National Association of Realtors reported Friday that the median sale price of an existing home was almost $304,000 last month. That's up 14% from a year ago. And one of the factors influencing the price is the rising cost of lumber. We'll hear more about that. Plus, we'll get all the morning's business news just ahead at 8:51. Till tomorrow, I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Moe. Be well.